Thank you for joining me on my podcast. This evening I'll be speaking to John Murphy from the Mayo Roscommon Breeders Group. I began by asking him how he went from breeding cattle to breeding horses.
Yeah, well, I suppose maybe around 2000 I started farming, and predominantly was breeding sucker cows and breeding for the export market, predominantly Belgian Blues. And then my dad passed away, and it sort of made it more difficult because I was working off farm and still do as an electrician for electrical contractor. So I phased out cows and got into finishing beef animals. And to be honest, I found it very difficult to make any money at it. And the margins were so tight. And I always had the feeling in the back of my head I was making money for somebody else. So I stopped that about three to four years ago. And I've probably increased the mare number since.
And I have interviewed quite a lot of people actually that have come from a farm like cattle breeding, and they've gone into horses, and they actually said it wasn't that different. And actually the technologies that we know now in horse breeding have been there with the cattle for many years.
Definitely in the dairy side of the industry and the pedigree side of the industry, the cattle industry, the breeding. That's for all the new technology. They're the forerunners, even to the equine industry. So what's commonplace there is probably cutting-edge horse house breeding industry. So it's not that much of a leap, except I suppose you have to have a love for horses to begin with. You know, you just don't go into it from a financial aspect before you think there's money, you know?
Yes. And I mean, things like cloning, well, it's not relatively new now, but at the time when it came out about cloning cruising, cloning would have been in cattle many years before that, wouldn't it? Maybe not in Ireland, but in other countries.
And definitely it started off in sheep.
Right.
And I suppose, again, it's a dairy-led thing because they get such a quick turnover or turnaround in improvement. That's why they don't mind having the input manually, like you said, the financial input into it, because they'll know really quickly whether it's successful or not, because they're turning around. Where in a horse breeding enterprise, you know, we say you take something like an embryo or a clone, and from a performance point of view, you know, it's 10 years down the road when you know exactly how successful it is. But in the dairy industry, maybe 3 years down the road.
And John, would you say it's easier to breed cattle than it is horses?
The funny thing, you know, I'd be guilty myself. You're at the equine clinic and you're there with a mare, and you haven't had a foal in 2 years, and this has been your fourth trip, and you know, but you've got a good four-year-old in England or in America. Whereas in the cattle industry, it's the first reason they're out the gate is fertility. You know,
right. Yes.
And you know, that mare that you've struggled with, possibly she had a filly foal, you'd keep that and bring it into the breeding program.
Right.
You'd never think of it from a fertility point of view. So that's probably what's a little bit more difficult about the horse breeding, and everything to do with foals and all that is a little bit trickier as well. It's a lot more straightforward in the cattle industry.
And I am an awful lot of, I mean, a couple of years ago, there really wasn't good prices for foals. And I know the market has really improved for all types of horses, even ponies. Can you see that happening now, John? Can you see it more profitable going into breeding horses?
Definitely at the minute, you know, there is a market there for all types of horses, but especially sport horses and sport horse foals and young horses. There's a very good market there. So the question is how long it lasts. But I know in the noughties, it brought people into breeding that weren't really sure what they were at. And when the crash came, there was a lot of horses that needed to be taken out of the system. I hope that doesn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd be hoping that, you know, just because it's profitable at the minute, it doesn't drive people into it. I think what did in the noughties maybe was more disposable cash rather than a need to make money from it.
And I mean, do you think breeders have learned something that, you know, they have the good mare and they're crossing it with the good stallion? They're just not having an average mare with a good stallion. Do you think they have put more thought into the crosses? Or
I definitely think so. And I definitely think if you go to any of the foal sales, you'll find a better standard of foal. And definitely the top end is becoming a better foal. And, you know, it's bringing international buyers in now, which maybe wasn't doing before. So I definitely think the standard of breeding is improving. And I suppose the education for the breeders is improving on what they need to do. And possibly something like the KT brought that into place, because it had breeders maybe ask questions of their fellow breeders and, you know, have discussions that they never had before, never had the opportunity to have before. But definitely the quality of foal is improving year on year. And the quality of mare and the performance in the mare is something that's more common now than was, you know?
What would you say, John, when you're looking at your mare, like how high, would you say show jumper, like would she want to be a 130 mare or 140 mare? Or, I mean, what would you consider as a good breeding mare?
Well, just to be honest, either a 130 mare herself, at least, or a very well-related mare.
Yes, okay.
Because, I suppose, not every mare goes into sport and then back to breeding. Some go directly, especially if they're well-related to a good horse. So, yeah, but either a 130 herself or maybe related to a 140 horse. That's sort of where you nearly want your baseline, you know?
Yes.
And when I say related, I suppose a sibling.
John, you've had some success, well, probably quite a bit of success in your breeding line.
Well, look, at it's relative. It's only the last couple of years that a couple of horses have sold fairly well. But it's an overnight success of 15 years, you know?
Yes.
I suppose it's trying to educate yourself as best you can, not alone in what, and being very critical of your mare and not being afraid to be critical of your mare and educating yourself in what's best cross her with, you know what I mean? And not be afraid to actually either spend money on a mare or a cover to get the horse you want.
Yes.
You know, and if you have a good mare, you have to give her a good chance as well. Like, you can't just bring her down the road to get her covered, you know?
No, and with the new technologies, I suppose you have stallions now that are more accessible to breeders as well. As you say, it's not just down the road.
Definitely. And, you know, there is all the veterinary facilities that are available to get your mare on foal to any of the markets. And I suppose by rights, we should be going to all these shows and looking at these horses in the flesh, see how they... We all know their quality, but see how they suit the mare in question. And
I think that's been a big... I think they have tried to push that one home, that you don't just look on the internet and just see a nice stallion, that you actually need to have a look at that stallion, weigh it up, how's it going to suit the mare? I think that's now... Yeah. Breeders are definitely doing that, whereas in the past, it looked flashy on the internet, you know, but they never considered to you know, how it would mix with their own mare.
Yeah, because, like, you know, no two horses are the same, but you try and match them up. Like, and if you are critical of your own mare or where her shortcomings are, you try and correct it. And I think it's important to try and do that. And again, if you're looking at your own mare through rose-colored glasses, it's very likely that, you know, you won't see the faults in her, and you know, you won't correct them when you're covering. And actually, that goes back to the group as well. That's another thing.
Yes.
From time to time, like, even I had a foal there 2 weeks ago, and one of the lads in the group was passing me, called into me, and I was right. I know all the nice things about him. I said, tell me where you'd like him to be better. You know.
Yeah, and you didn't fall out.
No. Like, it's some sort of criticism.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the guy that comes in and tells you you have a lovely foal, and goes down the road and tells you that foal is criminal, you know.
Yes.
He's not doing you any favors.
No. And I mean, the breeders group there, they held an auction there recently and it did very yes. well. And you had quite a lot of nominations up there. I mean, is this something that you do annually in the breeders group?
It's probably the fourth annual auction.
Yes. Fourth,
last year, because of COVID, we had to go online with it. And we did again this year, and it opens it up to a bigger audience. And you know, yeah. the fair is all sort of completes the circle a little bit. The stallion owners, you know, they really, really support our stallion nomination auction, and that in turn, the funds from that go straight to our foal auction, which we would like to think is improving the foal prices. If you know, the money we can put into marketing and online platform for foreign buyers and stuff like that. So, like, it all comes back. You know, I think the stallion owners realize the benefit to them of good foal auctions. Plus the fact that they have a captive audience there of breeders to put their stallion in front of them. It was quite interesting this year. Some stallion owners were on the group and
yes.
they flashed up videos and, you know, people put in questions to them. And they answered the questions really honestly. And it was almost a new departure for us.
I think it's more accessible. Everything has become more accessible. Like even as you say, the stallion owners are there. Do you know what I mean? They might be on their
yes.
phone answering the questions, but they're always online, which will probably do the auctions and any of the sales. It will do it a benefit, you know?
Oh, definitely. Like, and like some of them stallion owners are top level show jumpers, so. To get their ear on an online platform like that, talk about what they think their stallion is or isn't, and what sort of mare he suits. I think it was brilliant for breeders because we're ordinary simple folk. We don't rub shoulders with these sort of fellas very often, you know?
No, but I think a lot of these stallion owners want they want successful progeny so that they can, you know, they have a showcase as well. So the more that they get involved, I think the better it is.
Oh, definitely.
You know,
the better mares they get, you know, the sooner their horse becomes established. You know, some horses in back in the day in Ireland, unfortunately enough, their time had almost passed when their best horses came to the top level. You know, so it's important that young horses that the owners or producers believe in. It's important that they get good mares from an early doors to get them going. You know.
I've heard a lot of the younger breeders like yourself, that is John, and they say that they never mind trying a new young stallion. It's not always the established one. You know, they look at the breeding line, and they will consider those young stallions as well.
I've often thought that maybe it's an Irish mentality, but you know, on the continent. Some of these younger stallions, they get really good mares from an early stage because they're so confident in their breeding that, you know, what they have is going to be good enough and what they breed it to should give them X, Y, or Z. Here in Ireland, it's like we say, just take Clover Hill, for example.
Mm.
If somebody had a Clover Hill mare here in Ireland, they would think that the daughter of that mare, her quality would be diluted.
Right. So
on the continent, by the way they would have bred that mare, they would be confident that the daughter would be better.
Yes.
So I think maybe that's why some of the younger stallions get more established on the continent sooner. And I think maybe it's the mentality we have to be confident in what we're breeding that it's better than its predecessors, you know?
Yes. Well, I suppose you have to move forward. You can't always, you know, you have to move forward. And that is one of the ways, I suppose, to do it. It just means that you're probably in your head, but not that you're taking a chance. But I mean, it's good to see young breeders, you know, saying, well, I'm not adverse to looking at younger stallions and seeing will they suit my mare, which is good.
I think where that really works is with the young breeders who are also producing the horses.
Yes.
There is, if you are going to a sale with your foal, like at the end of the day, the biggest, the page is probably the strongest asset as long as he's a good, decent type of foal. So the guy that's maybe producing this 3-4-year-old horse that breeds him himself, he can easier maybe take the gamble on the younger horse, because his pedigree won't matter as much once he's doing what's asked of him. So it's a little bit easier for somebody like that than somebody just trying to sell the foal, because the pedigree helps to sell, you know. So that's why the more young breeder producers we have here, the better for everybody, you know.
That's it. And we touched on new technologies there, and we heard Clem McMahon give a really good interview after he won in Cavan about how he used ICSI. What are your views on the advancements in breeding? Do you think they're for the good, or do you think we need to slow down? Or I just want to get your opinion on it.
I suppose it's like the surest egg, isn't it? It's good in spots. Like ICSI is great for, say, an older mare that can't carry a foal, or, but like this whole thing of just using the mare as a tool to have a say, and I think you pollute the market with what was high end, and it becomes almost too easily attainable. So I think it needs to be regulated, and like, you know, I think if you breed dogs, even I think they're only allowed to register a certain amount of litters to
it. Yes, that's correct. Yeah, that is correct.
You know, 20, 30 embryos off a mare, I don't think it does. It's like, then you don't have a unique product anymore.
Yeah. I think in Clem's case, he was just very lucky because of Pacino's untimely death. It was great that it was available to him. And in circumstances like that, I mean, it's a second chance for him, you know?
Yeah.
And then it becomes very expensive, John. Not everybody can afford it. That's the other side.
No, and it takes the top level of breeding, which I suppose goes on to be the top level of production, those top level horses. It makes them very elite. I know that the top level jumping horses at this moment in time are very elite, but you know, me or you or anybody else could be lucky enough to breed one of those. But you know, the avenues that get closed down if there's, you know, a mare in sport at the minute, and you know, she takes 3 months out, or maybe she's got a niggle of an injury.
Yes.
And they sent her off to wherever it is, Antwerp or Italy, and they harvest as many off-sites as they can out of her and put her back into work. And, you know, I think it devalues her stock, and it devalues all stock in that, you know, there's an abundance of performance mares, with a progeny of performance mares out there. And I suppose the other thing it does is it will eventually make the gene pool very shallow.
Yes, I understand. Yes. Yeah, it has its benefits, and then it has its downfalls, its future downfalls, we'll say. Breeding, like, is it still for everybody? Can I have a mare and decide, or, you know, has it become a bit elitist that, you know, you're going to the top stallion? Can the average person, average horse person, will say, breed a decent foal?
Oh, I think so. Like, at the end of the day, we're all trying to breed a 160 horse. What percentage of horses ended up as 160 horses? Maybe 1%.
Yes. So
that means the whole 99% of the market there for your, I won't say your average horse, but your good, decent horse. And I suppose the first thing you look at is, you know, we all, as I said, we all look to breed a 160 horse. But if you could, you know, if your horse isn't 160, does it have the temperament to be an amateur's horse, to be a 130 horse? Does it have the rideability? Does it, you know, is it a good-looking horse? So you should be breeding for all those things too. Like, if somebody, like, if you're breeding just to breed a 160 horse, and you breed to maybe a stallion that would have a known temperament issue and breed susceptible to horses are susceptible to bad temperament, like, if that horse doesn't make it to a professional yard, he's not good enough to make it in a professional yard. He's not good enough for any other job either, like.
Yes.
So, and like, the professional yard needs maybe 5% of the horses. So I think we're very foolish if we don't breed horses that will do lots of different jobs. And hopefully it goes on to the top. But if it doesn't, if there's somebody there for it, then somebody will make good use of that horse.
And now with Brexit, do we see less buyers coming in from abroad, or are they buying them online? How is that working?
they're definitely buying online. I wouldn't have got up to speed exactly how it's going to pan out with Brexit.
Yeah. But,
you know, last, we say in the autumn last year, the sales, they were all very strong. I know that was pre-Brexit, but I think online, I think the market will maybe recalibrate a small bit, but they'll find ways around this to make it work, you know?
Yes.
And the norm will just become something slightly different. But I think there'll always be an English market there.
Just before I let you go, John, looking ahead for the Mayo Roscommon Breeders Group, I believe there's a timetable of events from young horse classes to the sales. Can you briefly tell me about those, or have I put you on the spot?
You put me on the spot with the dates, but
no,
there will be a young horse in late June.
Yes.
The 3-year-old loose jumping competition. I actually don't have the date off the top of my head.
Don't worry. I think they have them up on their Facebook page anyhow.
They are on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
And one of the guys in the group knows his dad was very into horses and he passed away there 2 years ago. So the cup is in honour of Pat Kilroy and the €1,000 prize money. So it's a good 3-year-old competition.
Yes.
And there'll also be selection days for an online 3-year-old sale. And then the selection day for the foals as well will be from the end of July through to the middle of August. And the sale is, I think, the second Saturday in October is the sale. No, you have me on the hop.
Don't worry about that, because I do know.
We're all on the group.
Yeah, it's all on.
Sorry not to cut across, but we're pushing an equine farming task force as well.
Right.
Small breeders on a level footing with all the different other types of farm, and we say there's hams there, it's targeted agricultural modernization scheme for, you know, we say hopefully if they can open it up like they had before to get grant aid for people building stables, sand pockets, sand arena lights and resurfacing and sand arenas, actually remodeling cattle housing, with young horses and the like, hopefully, and equine fencing. So hopefully we can get them things in by lobbying the government.
Well, I think the way the breeding is going, and it's a major industry that they should get some sort of funding. You know, a lot of breeders during COVID as well, and a lot of even riding centres, and they've all suffered because of COVID too. You know, and feeding horses.
And I also think that the rich vein of young talented riders in this country. They're scattered across the world, and there's no opportunity for them to start up their own business here. Like, if they were a beef farmer in an enterprise that's losing money and they get their green cert, they can go and they can get grant aid of, I think, 60% grant on an investment of 80,000.
Yeah.
Like, if you were a young fella that was, you know, producing young horses there, and it would put added value to all breeders' young horses. If they could get them well produced. If that young fella, if he can get a start up of the same as a beef farmer, be on a level playing field, we would keep some of our talent at home.
Yeah, because we lose so many of them.
It would add to the talent of the horse. Oh yeah, and it would put added value to the horses that are exported over the country. And that's all foreign direct investment into the local economy, which trickles down to every aspect of the local economy. This doesn't happen in a lot of other sectors of farming.
I was speaking to a show jumper. Well, I speak to many of them, but a couple of weeks ago, and I was saying if he got paid for every hour he worked, he would be a very rich man, because I think he starts at maybe 6 o'clock in the morning and he's still out with horses at 10 o'clock at night. And his groom was a bit insulted, and I said, "Just that is true, but you know, I'm not saying something that's not untrue. I wasn't being unkind to him, but if he worked those hours, he would." If he got paid for every hour he worked, he would be very rich.
Yes. And like, you know, it's just a leg up to get these people going, you know. And I think as a breeder of horses, you know, I wouldn't mind holding on to a 3-year-old and putting them into a bit of work. And, you know, maybe holding on to a 5-year-old. If if there was, you know, those young producers there to do that sort of work, they'd be adding value to your horse. But it's very hard for them because, you know, they need to go away and almost save the money to come back because yeah. there's no help from government here.
But John,
we're worldwide famed in.
If you had, I don't know whether you have children, but if you did and they got a job opportunity in America and having a different life and riding maybe five horses, what would you say to them now or struggling at home?
Certainly, I don't want to say to myself, but certainly you would push them to go for that.
Wouldn't you, yeah.
There's never an opportunity for these guys to come home and set up at home unless they have the funding themselves put into it. I'm sure they don't all want to stay away. Like they all want to serve their time in all these top yards across Europe and America. But do they want to stay there? I suppose is the question.
Well, the Irish Nike always like to come home. I don't care what anyone says.
I've been trying to think the same myself. And wouldn't it be great to have them come home for something?
Ireland is a great, it produces them. Like I see, even in the spring tour, we two young girls, Emma McAtee and Robin Moran from Limerick, actually. And young riders coming up the ranks and, you know, like we produced them in these tours and then the sport horse classes and then to Grand Prix. And then after they do that, they're gone. Really, they're taken up by another country who recognises how good they actually are.
Yes.
It's happened to so many of them.
And I suppose, look, it's difficult to have the competition here in Ireland for them because we're an island nation and even the funding for it. But it'd be nice for the sport horse equine sector to get some, you know, put it on a level playing field with other aspects of farming. That we bring in as much money as into the exchequer, you know?
Yes, that is true. This one question before I let you go, John.
Yeah.
As a breeder, and you breed a beautiful foal, what do you hope for that foal as it goes on? Is it to win Nations Cups? When you see that foal, what do you hope for?
That's the dream, but the reality is that he goes into a good home and he reaches full potential. Now, that depends on how well I bred him, what that potential is. And that he'll help the mayor along, you know?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice to get a phone call? Somebody's asking you, you know, we have a really, really good horse here. Do you have a foal off that mare?
Yeah, well, hopefully that will happen to you. If it hasn't happened already, maybe you're just being very, you're not telling us there. Maybe it's happened already, hasn't it, John?
No, not really. I'm a late starter to the game, maybe a little bit, but.
Well, I suppose if you put someday. In your cattle breeding years as well, maybe you're not that late.
I think I'm drawing a line under that, though.
it's tough work whether you're breeding cattle or horses, but I suppose, as we said,
even you'll have your bad days, so you have to savor the good days as well, you know.
There's no shortage of hard work with either of them.
No, and hardship and bad days. But it makes the favour of the good ones, you know?
That's it. Well, thank you very much, John. It was very informative.
Thank you.